Second was designed to undermine the intelligence community's unanimous assessment that Russia interfered in the 2016 election. One obstacle to Mr. Giuliani's work was Ambassador Marie Yovanovitch. A 33-year veteran of the Foreign Service, Ambassador Yovanovitch had partnered with Ukraine to root out the kind of corruption that would have allowed Mr. Giuliani's lies to flourish. In order to complete his mission, Mr. Giuliani first needed Ambassador Yovanovitch out of the way. And so in early 2019, Mr. Giuliani launched a public smear campaign against the ambassador, an effort that involved Mr. Giuliani's allies in Ukraine, the president's allies in the United States, and eventually President Trump himself. Please remember that the object of the president's Ukraine scheme was to obtain a corrupt advantage for his reelection campaign. As we will show, the president went to extraordinary lengths to cheat in the next election. That scheme begins with the attempt to get Ambassador Yovanovitch, quote, out of the way, unquote. By all accounts, Ambassador Yovanovitch was a highly respected and effective ambassador. Witnesses uniformly praised her 33-year career as a nonpartisan public servant and told us that she particularly excelled in fighting corruption abroad. President George Bush named her as an ambassador twice, and President Obama nominated her as ambassador to Ukraine, where she represented the United States from 2016 to 2019. Eradicating corruption in Ukraine has been a key policy priority of the U.S. government for years. During the House inquiry, the ambassador explained why implementing this anti-corruption policy was so important.
As critical as the war against Russia is, Ukraine's struggling democracy has an equally important challenge, battling the Soviet legacy of corruption, which has pervaded Ukraine's government. Corruption makes Ukraine's leaders ever vulnerable to Russia, and the Ukrainian people understand that. That's why they launched the Revolution of Dignity in 2014, demanding to be a part of Europe, demanding the transformation of the system, demanding to live under the rule of law. Ukrainians wanted the law to apply equally to all people, whether the individual in question is the president or any other citizen. It was a question of fairness, of dignity. Here again, there is a coincidence of interests. Corrupt leaders are inherently less trustworthy, while an honest and accountable Ukrainian leadership makes a U.S.-Ukrainian partnership more reliable and more valuable to the United States.
On the evening of April 24th, 2019, Ambassador Yovanovitch was hosting an event at the U.S. Embassy, honoring the memory of an anti-corruption fighter who had been killed when acid was thrown in her face the previous year. At about 10 that night, the embassy event was interrupted by a telephone call from Washington. Ambassador Yovanovitch described his conversation with the head of the State Department's Human Resources Department.
She said that there was great concern on the seventh floor of the State Department. That's where the leadership of the State Department sits. There was great concern. They were worried. She just wanted to give me a heads up about this. And, you know, things seemed to be going on. And so she just wanted to give me a heads up.
Confused, the ambassador asked for more information from Washington. 3 hours later, they spoke again. Ambassador Yovanovitch learned that there were concerns about her, quote, up the street, that is, at the White House. The ambassador was told to get on the first plane home. Why was this respected career diplomat abruptly removed from her post? Why was she, in fact, urged by the State Department to catch the first plane home, that she was in danger, she shouldn't wait? At the time, the White House would not say, but today we know the truth. The truth is that Ambassador Yovanovitch was the victim of a smear campaign organized by Rudy Giuliani, amplified by President Trump's allies, and designed to give President Trump the pretext he needed to recall her without warning. Mr. Giuliani has admitted as much to the press. In order to understand Mr. Giuliani's smear campaign against Ambassador Yovanovitch, you need to know about a few additional characters who Mr. Giuliani drew into his scheme. The first of these characters is Viktor Shokin, the disgraced former prosecutor general of Ukraine, who was fired by the Ukrainian government for gross corruption. In 2016, at the urging of the European Union, the International Monetary Fund, and the United States government, the Parliament of Ukraine voted to remove Mr. Shokin as prosecutor general because he was corrupt and refused to prosecute corruption cases. At the urging of the United States, the European Union, the International Monetary Fund, all urged the Ukraine government to dismiss Mr. Shokin. The second character is Yuri Lutsenko, who succeeded Mr. Shokin as prosecutor general. Mr. Lutsenko also proved reluctant to prosecute corruption cases, and several witnesses testified that he also had a reputation for dishonesty and corruption. Ambassador Yovanovitch and Deputy Assistant Secretary George Kent both testified that the U.S. Embassy in Kiev eventually stopped working with Mr. Lutsenko altogether. Shokin, Lutsenko, and Giuliani. The goals of all three characters were aligned. Shokin had it out for Vice President Biden because of the role that the Vice President played in his 2016 firing. The Vice President, carrying out U.S. policy, urged the Ukrainian government to dismiss the corrupt Shokin. I note that the Vice President, the former Vice President, has been criticized for urging that he be fired. Lutsenko found his career trajectory fading and wanted President Trump's support to boost his political prospects in Ukraine. Giuliani needed partners in Ukraine willing to announce two sham investigations meant to boost President Trump's own campaign. All three wanted Ambassador Yovanovitch out of the way. And so in early 2019, the smear campaign began. Ms. Lutsenko became the primary vector for false allegations against Ambassador Yovanovitch. Deputy Assistant Secretary George Kent testified that Lutsenko's allegations against Ambassador Yovanovitch were motivated by revenge.
Over the course of 2018 and 2019, I became increasingly aware of an effort by Rudy Giuliani and others, including his associates Lev Parnas and Igor Fruman, to run a campaign to smear Ambassador Yovanovitch and other officials at the U.S. Embassy in Kyiv. The chief agitators on the Ukrainian side of this effort were some of those same corrupt former prosecutors I had encountered, particularly Yuri Lutsenko and Viktor Shokin. They were now peddling false information in order to extract revenge against those who had exposed their misconduct, including U.S. diplomats, Ukrainian anti-corruption officials, and reform-minded civil society groups in Ukraine.
As Mr. Kent indicated, the smear campaign against Ambassador Yovanovitch was orchestrated by a core group of corrupt Ukrainian officials working at Mr. Giuliani's direction. This group included two additional characters who have been in the news of late, Lev Parnas and Igor Fruman. Mr. Parnas and Mr. Fruman were, of course, indicted last year on several charges, including charges related to large donations they made to support President Trump. Simply put, in doing her job well, Ambassador Yovanovitch drew Mr. Lutsenko's ire. And as Mr. Kent observed, you can't promote principled anti-corruption efforts without pissing off corrupt people. As it turned out, this statement applied to Yuri Lutsenko and to Rudy Giuliani, who feared that the ambassador would stand in the way of his corrupt efforts to coerce Ukraine into conducting investigations that would benefit the political interests of his client, President Trump. Giuliani's coordinated smear campaign against Ambassador Yovanovitch became public in the United States in late March 2019, with the publication of a series of opinion pieces in The Hill based on interviews with Lutsenko. On March 20th, 2019, in one piece in The Hill, Lutsenko falsely alleged that Ambassador Yovanovitch had given him a so-called do not prosecute list. Not only was the allegation false, but after having helped originate the claim, Lutsenko himself would later go on to retract it. The same piece also falsely stated that Ambassador Yovanovitch had, quote, made disparaging statements about President Trump, unquote. A statement issued by the State Department declared the allegations to be a total fabrication. President Trump promoted Solomon's article in a tweet, which intensified the public attacks against Ambassador Yovanovitch. Then on March 24th, Donald Trump Jr. called Ambassador Yovanovitch a joker on Twitter and called for her removal. You can see the slides of the two tweets. These unfounded smears by the president and his son reverberated in Ukraine. Deputy Assistant Secretary George Kent testified that starting in mid-March, Rudy Giuliani was almost unmissable in this, quote, campaign of slander, close quote. And according to Mr. Kent, Mr. Lutsenko's press spokeswoman retweeted Donald Trump Jr.'s tweet attacking the ambassador, further undermining her standing in Ukraine. Her standing, the United States ambassador's standing. Mr. Giuliani was not content to stay behind the scenes either. He promoted the same attacks on the ambassador on Twitter, Fox News, and elsewhere. At the end of March, the attacks intensified. Ambassador Yovanovitch sent Undersecretary of State for Political Affairs David Hale an email detailing her concerns and asking for a strong statement of support from the State Department. In reply, the State Department told her that they were unwilling to help her, their own ambassador, because if they issued a public statement supporting her, quote, it could be undermined, unquote, by the president, and their concern that, quote, the rug would be pulled out from underneath the State Department. The State Department cannot express support for an American ambassador threatened abroad because they are concerned that if they express support for that American ambassador, the rug will be pulled out from under them by the president. What it must have taken to convince our State Department to refuse support to its ambassador. Phone records show that Giuliani also kept the White House apprised of these developments, as you can see from these slides. Again, it is worth remembering that smearing Ambassador Yovanovitch was a means to an end. Removing her would allow the president's allies the freedom to pressure Ukraine to announce their sham investigations. So we should talk for a few minutes about the investigations that Rudy Giuliani and his henchmen were promoting on behalf of the president. Let's focus first on the allegation that Ukraine, not Russia, interfered in our last presidential election. In February 2017, shortly after the intelligence community, the CIA, the FBI, all the intelligence agencies of the United States unanimously assessed that Russia interfered in the election to help Donald Trump, this alternative theory gained some attention when Russian President Putin promoted it at a press conference. Second, he said, I'm quoting from him, it's in the Russian on the slides, I think. Second, as we all know, during the presidential campaign in the United States, the Ukrainian government adopted a unilateral position in favor of one candidate. More than that, certain oligarchs, certainly with the approval of the political leadership, funded this candidate, or female candidate, to be more precise. That's President Putin talking, shifting the blame to Ukraine. Dr. Fiona Hill best explained how the Ukraine narrative is a fictional narrative being propagated by the Russian security services.
Based on questions and statements I've heard, Some of you on this committee appear to believe that Russia and its security services did not conduct a campaign against our country, and that perhaps, somehow, for some reason, Ukraine did. This is a fictional narrative that has been perpetrated and propagated by the Russian security services themselves. The unfortunate truth is that Russia was the foreign power that systematically attacked our democratic institutions in 2016. This is the public conclusion of our intelligence agencies, confirmed in bipartisan congressional reports. It is beyond dispute, even if some of the underlying details must remain classified. The impact of the successful 2016 Russian campaign remains evident today. Our nation is being torn apart. Truth is questioned. Our highly professional and expert Korea Foreign Service is being undermined. US support for Ukraine, which continues to face armed Russian aggression, has been politicized. The Russian government's goal is to weaken our country, to diminish America's global role, and to neutralize a perceived U.S. threat to Russian interests.
President Trump knew this too. His former Homeland Security Advisor, Tom Bossert, said that the idea that Ukraine hacked the DNC server was, quote, not only a conspiracy theory, it is completely debunked, close quote. And he and other U.S. officials spent hours with the president explaining why. The second false allegation that the president wanted the Ukrainians to announce was that Vice President Biden used his power to protect the company on whose board his son sat by forcing the removal of Viktor Shokin, the corrupt former prosecutor general. It is true that Vice President Biden helped remove Mr. Shokin, who was widely believed to be corrupt. And as I said a few minutes ago, it was official policy of the United States, the European Community, and others, in order to fight corruption in Ukraine, to ask that Shokin and Lutsenko be removed. So the Vice President Biden, in fulfilling U.S. policy, pressured Ukraine to remove Shokin, not to secure some personal benefit, but to advance the official policy of the United States and its allies. Even Ms. Lutsenko, who initially seeded the allegations against Mr. Biden in American media, later admitted that the allegations against the vice president were false. And Rudy Giuliani told Kurt Volker, the special representative for Ukrainian negotiations, who had a prominent role in the scheme, that he also knew the attacks on Joe Biden were a lie. With Ambassador Yovanovitch out of the way, the first chapter of the Ukraine scheme was complete. Mr. Giuliani and his agents could now apply direct pressure to the Ukrainian government to spread these two falsehoods. And who benefited from this scheme? Who sent Mr. Giuliani to Ukraine in the first place? Of course, we could rephrase that question, as the former Republican leader of the Senate, Howard Baker, asked it in 1973. What did the president know? And when did he know it?
And those were remarks by Democratic Representative Gerald Nadler, the chair of the House Intelligence Committee. This is live coverage of the Senate impeachment trial. We're now going to hear from another impeachment manager, this being Democratic Representative Sylvia Garcia.
Mr. Chief Justice, Senators, President's Counsel, President Trump and President Zelensky's relationship started out well. President Trump wanted the two investigations from Zelensky, and he had no reason to believe that he would not get what he wanted. On April 21st, 2019, Zelensky, who was new to politics, won a landslide victory in Ukraine's presidential election. That evening, President Trump called Zelensky to congratulate him. On that first call, Zelensky invited President Trump to visit Ukraine for the upcoming inauguration. President Trump, in turn, promised that his administration would send someone at a very, very high level. During that same April call, President Trump invited Zelensky to the White House, saying, "When you're settled in and ready, I'd like to invite you to the White House. We have a lot of things to talk about, but we're with you all the way." Zelensky immediately accepted the president's invitation, adding that the whole team and I are looking forward to that visit. Numerous witnesses testified about the significance of a White House meeting for the political newcomer. A White House meeting would show Ukrainians that America supported Zelensky's anti-corruption platform, the clear backing of the President of the United States, Ukraine's most important patron, would also send a powerful message to Russia that we had Ukraine's back. During that April 24th call, President Trump never even uttered the word corruption. But the White House call recap falsely stated that the two presidents had discussed Ukraine's anti-corruption efforts. Shortly after the phone call, Jennifer Williams, advisor to Vice President Pence, learned that President Trump asked Vice President Pence to attend Zelensky's inauguration. Williams and her colleagues began planning for Pence's trip to Kyiv. At the same time, Giuliani was trying to get Ukraine to investigate the Bidens and the alleged 2016 election interference. On April 24, Giuliani went on Fox and Friends and had this to say.
"Keep your eye on Ukraine, because in Ukraine, a lot of the dirty work was done in digging up the information. American officials we used, Ukrainian officials we used. That's like collusion with the Ukrainians, and or actually in this case, conspiracy with the Ukrainians. I think it gets some interesting information about Joe Biden from Ukraine. About his son, Hunter Biden, about a company he was on the board of for years, which may be one of the most crooked companies in Ukraine."
For this campaign to be truly beneficial to his boss, President Trump, Giuliani needed access to the new government in Ukraine. He dispatched his associates, Lev Parnas and Igor Fruman, to try to make inroads with the Zelensky team. On April 25, former Vice President Biden publicly announced his bid for the presidency, and immediately he was at the top of the polls. That same day, David Holmes, an American diplomat at our embassy in Ukraine, learned that Giuliani had reached out to the head of President Zelensky's campaign. As Mr. Holmes explained, the new Ukrainian government began to think that Giuliani was a significant person in terms of managing their relationship with the United States. As Giuliani and his associates worked behind the scenes to get access to the new leadership in Ukraine, President Trump was publicly signaling his interest in the investigations. On May 2nd, the president appeared on Fox News, when asked, should the former vice president explain himself on his feeling in Ukraine and whether there was a conflict with his son's business interests, President Trump replied as follows.
I'm hearing it's a major scandal, major problem, very bad things happened, and we'll see what that is. And they even have him on tape talking about it. They have Joe Biden on tape talking about the prosecutor, and I've seen that tape. A lot of people are talking about that tape. But that's up to them. They have to solve that problem.
The tape President Trump referenced is a video from January 2018 in which Vice President Biden explained he placed an ultimatum to the Ukrainian president to remove the corrupt prosecutor general to ensure that the taxpayer money would be used appropriately. The vice president's actions were consistent with official U.S. policy, as well as the opinions of the international community. On May 9, the New York Times published an article about Giuliani's plan to visit Ukraine. In the article, Giuliani confirmed that he planned to meet Zelensky At that meeting, he wanted to press the Ukrainian government to pursue the investigations, investigations that President Trump promoted only days earlier. Giuliani said, "We're not meddling in an election. We're meddling in an investigation which we have a right to do." Giuliani even went so far as to acknowledge that his actions could benefit President Trump personally. He said, and I quote, "This isn't foreign policy. I'm asking them to do an investigation they're doing already and that other people are telling them to stop. And I'm going to give them reasons why they shouldn't stop it, because that information would be very, very helpful to my client and may turn out to be helpful to my government." That's it. Right there, Giuliani admitting he was asking Ukraine to work on investigations that would be very, very helpful to the president. He was not doing foreign policy. He was not doing this on behalf of the government. He was doing this for personal interests of his client, Donald J. Trump. The next morning, on May 10, amid coverage of his planned trip to Ukraine, Giuliani tweeted further about Biden, then had a flurry of calls with partners who was helping in planning his trip to Ukraine. That same day, Giuliani also spoke with Ambassador Volker on the phone for more than 30 minutes. Ambassador Volker had learned that Giuliani intended to travel to Ukraine and had called to warn Giuliani that Prosecutor General Lysenko is not credible. Don't listen to what he is saying. Later that day, Giuliani had a 17-minute call with a masked White House number before speaking again with Parnas for 12 minutes. That same day, on May 10, Politico asked President Trump about Giuliani's upcoming trip, and he replied, "I have not spoken to him at any great length, but I will. I will speak to him before he leaves." But that evening, on Fox News, Giuliani announced, "I'm not going to Ukraine because I think I'm walking into a group of people that are enemies of the president." Separately, in a text message to Politico, Giuliani alleged that the original offer for a meeting with Zelensky was a setup. He said it was a setup orchestrated by several vocal critics of President Trump who were advising Zelensky. Giuliani declared, "Zelensky is in the hands of avowed enemies of President Trump." But Giuliani had not stopped trying. He had Parnas send a letter from him to Zelensky's senior aide on May 11 asking for a meeting. That later made it clear that Giuliani was representing the President Trump as a private citizen and that he was working with President Trump's knowledge and consent. The letter is on the slide and reads, quote, "In my capacity as personal counsel to President Trump and with his knowledge and consent, I request a meeting with you on this upcoming Monday, May 13, or Tuesday, May 14. I will need no more than half an hour of your time, and I will be accompanied by my colleague, Victoria Tunsing, a distinguished American attorney who is very familiar with this matter." But it did not appear that Giuliani and Parnas' attempts to get the meeting were working. That same day, Giuliani sent a text to Parnas asking, "This guy is canceling meeting, I think." Approximately 3 hours later, Giuliani sent Parnas drafts of a public statement that people advising the president-elect are no friends of the president. 3 days later, President Trump instructed Vice President Pence not to attend the inauguration in Ukraine. Just 3 days later, Vice Presidential Staffer Jennifer Williams received a surprising call from Pence's Chief of Staff. She described it during her public testimony.
On May 13th, an assistant to the Vice President's Chief of Staff called and informed me that President Trump had decided that the Vice President would not attend the inauguration in Ukraine. She did not provide any further explanation. I relayed that instruction to others involved in planning the potential trip. I also informed the NSC that the Vice President would not be attending so that it could identify a head of delegation to represent the United States at President-elect Zelensky's inauguration.
Notably, Williams confirmed that the inauguration date had not yet been decided, scheduled at the time of that phone call. So the reason for President Trump's decision was certainly not due to a scheduling conflict. Secretary of Energy Rick Perry ultimately led the delegation to the inaugural. Accompanying Secretary Perry were Ambassador to the European Union, Gordon Sondland, Ambassador Volker, and NSC Director for Ukraine, Lieutenant Colonel Alexander Vindman. Senator Rob Johnson also attended many of the inaugural events with the delegation. When asked if this delegation was a good group, Holmes replied, "It was not as senior a delegation as we might have expected." After the inauguration, Ambassadors Volker and Sondland left Kyiv with a very favorable impression of President Zelensky. Ambassador Volker said that believed it was important that President Trump personally engaged with the President of Ukraine in order to demonstrate full U.S. support for him. When the inauguration team returned to the United States, they had a meeting with President Trump on May 23. The May 23 meeting with President Trump proved to be important for two good reasons. First, with Ambassador Yovanovitch out of the way, President Trump authorized Ambassador Sondland, Secretary Perry, and Ambassador Volker to lead engagement with the new administration in Ukraine. And two, President Trump instructed them to satisfy Giuliani's concerns in order to move forward on Ukraine matters. These officials were all political appointees, and Ambassador Sondland had donated $1 million to the president's inauguration. The president saw these three political appointees as officials who would fulfill his requests. Ambassador Volker testified that he, Ambassador Sondland, Secretary Perry, and Senator Johnson took turns making their case that this is a new crowd. It's a new president in Ukraine. He's committed to doing the right things, including fighting corruption. They recommended that President Trump followed through on his invitation for President Zelensky to meet with him in the Oval Office. But President Trump did not receive the recommendation well. At his public hearing, Ambassador Volker described the May 23rd Oval Office meeting with President Trump. Let's listen.
"We stressed our finding that President Zelensky represented the best chance for getting Ukraine out of the mire of corruption it had been in for over 20 years. We urged him to invite President Zelensky to the White House. The president was very skeptical. Given Ukraine's history of corruption, that's understandable. He said that Ukraine was a corrupt country full of terrible people. He said they tried to take me down. In the course of that conversation, he referenced conversations with Mayor Giuliani. It was clear to me that despite the positive news and recommendations being conveyed by this official delegation about the new president, President Trump had a deeply rooted negative view on Ukraine rooted in the past. He was receiving other information from other sources, including Mayor Giuliani, that was more negative, causing him to retain this negative view.
Witnesses said the reference to taking me down was to unfounded allegations that Ukraine had interfered in the 2016 election. This was what President Trump considered to be corruption in Ukraine. The president's words echoed Giuliani's public statements about Ukraine in early May. Rather than committing to an Oval Office meeting with a Ukrainian leader, President Trump directed the delegation to talk to Giuliani. Here is how Ambassador Sondland described that instruction from the president.
If we wanted to get anything done with Ukraine, it was apparent to us we needed to talk to Rudy.
Right. You understood that Mr. Giuliani spoke for the president, correct?
That's correct.
Ambassador Sondland saw the writing on the wall. Sondland concluded that if we did not talk to Rudy, nothing would move forward on Ukraine. The three amigos, as they called themselves, did as the president ordered and began talking to Giuliani. Dr. Hill testified, Volker, Sondland, and Perry gave us every impression that they were meeting with Rudy Giuliani at this point, and Rudy Giuliani was also saying on the television, and indeed has said subsequently, that he was closely coordinating with the State Department. Like Dr. Hill, Ambassador Bolton closely tracked Giuliani's Ukraine-related activities. Hill testified about a conversation she had with Bolton in May of 2019. That conversation was revealing, so let's listen.
On television making these statements, and I had already brought to Ambassador Bolton's attention the attacks, the smear campaign against Ambassador Yovanovitch, and expressed great regret about how this was unfolding, and in fact, the shameful way in which Ambassador Yovanovitch was being smeared and attacked. And I'd asked if there was anything that we could do about it. And Ambassador Bolton had looked pained, basically indicated with body language that there was nothing which we could do about it. And he then, in the course of that discussion, said that Rudy Giuliani was a hand grenade that was going to blow everyone up.
Did you understand what he meant by that?
I did, actually.
What did he mean?
Well, I think he meant that, obviously, what Mr. Giuliani was saying was pretty explosive in any case. He was frequently on television making quite incendiary remarks about everyone involved in this, and that he was clearly pushing forward issues and ideas that would, probably come back to haunt us. And, in fact, I think...
According to Hill's description, Bolton said that Giuliani's influence could be an obstacle to increased White House engagement with Ukraine. He instructed his staff not to meet with Giuliani. In June, Volker and Sondland relayed to Ambassador Taylor that President Trump wanted to hear from Zelensky before scheduling the meeting in the Oval Office. Ambassador Taylor testified that he did not understand at the time what that meant. Around this time, the president publicly expressed that he thought it would be okay to accept foreign interference to assist his campaign if it was in the form of opposition research on his opponent. Let's listen to that shocking interview.
The campaign this time around, if foreigners, if Russia, if China, if someone else offers you information on an opponent, should they accept it or should they call the FBI?
I think maybe you do both. I think you might want to listen. There's nothing wrong with listening. If somebody called from a country, Norway, we have information on your opponent. Oh, I think I'd want to hear it.
You want that kind of interference in our elections?
It's not an interference. They have information. I think I'd take it.
Shocking video. Meanwhile, Giuliani continued to press Ukraine to do the president's political dirty work. On June 21, for instance, Giuliani tweeted the following. New press of Ukraine still silent on investigation of Ukrainian interference in the 2016 election and alleged Biden bribery of President Poroshenko. Time for leadership and investigate both if you want to purge how Ukraine was abused by Hillary and Obama people. The quid pro quo scheme was taking shape. Giuliani was publicly advocating for Ukraine to conduct politically motivated investigations while President Trump refused to schedule an Oval Office meeting for Ukraine's new president. As Ambassador Sondland testified, the scheme to pressure Ukraine to conduct these investigations would only get more insidious with time.
Those were the remarks from Democratic Representative Sylvia Garcia of Texas, who is one of seven floor managers for the House of Representatives. This is live coverage of the Senate impeachment trial of President Donald Trump. We now turn to another Democratic House manager. This is Jason Crow, a Democrat from Colorado.
Take the break if that's acceptable for everybody. Mr. Chief Justice, members of the Senate, counsel for the President, and the American people, where were you on July 25th, 2019? It was a Thursday. Members of the U.S. Senate were here in this chamber. On July 25th, across the Atlantic, our 68,000 troops stationed throughout Europe were doing what they do every day, training and preparing to support our allies and defend against Russia. The professionalism and sacrifice of our men and women in uniform is a source of great strength. But America is also strong, and America is also secure because we have friends. On July 25th, 2019, one of those friends was a man named Oleksandr Markiev. In a story told by Sabra Ayers of the Los Angeles Times, Oleksandr was a soldier in the Ukrainian army defending his country and Europe against Russian-backed forces on Ukraine's Eastern Front. He was in a trench. He was 38 years old. Oleksandr would later die defending his country during a mortar attack on his fighting position, giving his life, just like over 13,000 of his fellow Ukrainians, on the front lines of the fight for liberty in Europe. That same Los Angeles Times article painted a picture of what the Ukrainians were going through during this time. Quote, tens of thousands of Ukrainians, like Markiev, volunteered to help fight the Russian-backed separatists in the east. Many of them were sent to the front line wearing sneakers and without flak jackets and helmets, let alone rifles and ammunition. Ukrainians across the country organized in an unprecedented united civil movement not seen since World War II to raise money to supply their ragtag military with everything from soldiers' boots to bullets. And while our friends were at war with Russia, wearing sneakers, some without helmets, something else was happening. On July 25th, President Trump made a phone call. He spoke with Ukrainian President Zelensky and asked for a favor. And on that same day, just hours after his call, his administration was quietly placing an illegal hold on critical military aid to support our friends. So why should any American care about what's happening in Ukraine? Timothy Morrison, former senior director for Europe and Russia at the NSC, put it bluntly.
Third, I continue to believe Ukraine is on the front lines of a strategic competition between the West and Vladimir Putin's revanchist Russia. Russia is a failing power, but it is still a dangerous one. The United States aids Ukraine and her people so they can fight Russia over there, and we don't have to fight Russia here. Support for Ukraine's territorial integrity and sovereignty has been a bipartisan objective since Russia's military invasion in 2014. It must continue to be.
We help our partner fight Russia over there so we don't have to fight Russia here. Our friends on the front lines and trenches with sneakers. Following Russia's invasion of Ukraine in 2014, the United States has stood by Ukraine. Our diplomats and military commanders have long said that supporting Ukraine makes us safer. But you don't need me to tell you that. You all know it very well. When the funding for this security assistance came up for a vote under this roof, 87 of you voted for the aid. And many of you have been staunch advocates for Ukraine, working in a nonpartisan way to support our friends. And that support makes a lot of sense, because politics should not play a part in ensuring that Ukraine can battle Russian aggression and ensure that freedom wins in Europe. This body has in so many ways set that example. Protecting Europe from Russia is not a political game. Let me provide some background. In early 2014, in what became known as the Revolution of Dignity, Ukrainian citizens demanded democratic reforms and an end to corruption, ousting the pro-Russian president. Within days, Russian military forces and their proxies invaded Ukraine, annexing Crimea and occupying portions of eastern Ukraine. Since 2014, more than 13,000 Ukrainians have been killed because of the conflict, and over 1.4 million have been forced from their homes. Russia's invasion of Ukraine is the first attempt to redraw Europe's borders since World War II. In 2017, then Secretary of Defense James Mattis summed it up well. He said, quote, "Despite Russia's denials, we know they are seeking to redraw international borders by force, undermining the sovereign and free nations of Europe." And as Ambassador Taylor put it, Russian aggression in Ukraine dismissed, quote, dismissed all the principles that have kept the peace and contributed to prosperity in Europe since World War II. It's clear that Russia is not just a threat in Europe, but for democracy and freedom around the world. Our friends and allies have also responded, imposing sanctions on Russia and providing billions of dollars in economic, humanitarian, and security assistance to Ukraine. This has been an international effort. Today, the European Union is the single largest contributor of foreign assistance to Ukraine, having provided roughly $12 billion in grants and loans since 2014. And the United States has provided over $3 billion in assistance in that time. Because we all know that we can't separate our own security from the security of our friends and allies. That's why the U.S. has provided economic security and humanitarian assistance in the form of equipment and training. Ambassador Taylor testified that American aid is a concrete demonstration of our, quote, commitment to resist aggression and freedom and defend freedom. He also detailed the many benefits of our assistance for Ukraine's forces.
Mr. Chairman, the security assistance that we provide, it takes many forms. One of the components of that assistance is counter-battery radar. Another component are sniper weapons. These weapons and this assistance it allows the Ukrainian military to deter further incursions by the Russians against their own, against Ukrainian territory. If that further incursion, further aggression, were to take place, more Ukrainians would die. So it is a deterrent effect that these weapons provide. It's also the ability, it gives the Ukrainians the ability to negotiate from a position of a little more strength when they negotiate an end to the war in Donbas, negotiating with the Russians. This also is a way that would reduce the number of Ukrainians who would die.
I would like to make a finer point of how this type of aid helps, because I know something about counter-battery radar. In 2005, I was an Army Ranger serving in a special operations task force in Afghanistan. We were at a remote operating base along the Afghan-Pakistan border. And frequently, the insurgents that we were fighting would launch rockets and missiles onto our small base. But luckily, we were provided with counter-battery radar. So 20, 30, 40 seconds before those rockets and mortars rained down on us, an alarm would sound. And we would run out from our tents and jump in to our concrete bunkers and wait for the attack to end. This is not a theoretical exercise, and the Ukrainians know it. For Ukraine, aid from the U.S. actually constitutes about 10% of their military budget. It's safe to say that they can't fight effectively without it. So there is no doubt U.S. military assistance to Ukraine makes a real difference in the fight against Russia. In 2019, Congress provided $391 million in security assistance. This included $250 million through the Department of Defense, the Ukraine Security Assistance Initiative, USAI, and $141 million through the State Department's Foreign Military Financing Program, FMF. President Trump signed the bill to authorize this aid in August 2018 and signed another bill to fund it the following month. The aid was underway. The train was leaving the station and following the same track it had followed every single year. But all of this was about to change. In July of 2019, President Trump ordered the Office of Management and Budget, OMB, to put a hold on all of the aid. The president personally made this decision even after his own appointed advisors warned him that it wasn't in our country's interest to withhold the aid. After overwhelming support in this Senate and against long-standing policy, even in his own administration. But what's most interesting to me about this is that he was only interested in the Ukraine aid. Nobody else. The U.S. provides aid to dozens of countries around the world. Lots of partners and allies. He didn't ask about any of them. Just Ukraine. The most important question here is, why would he do that? What was his motivation? Well, we now know why. This hold shocked people across our own government. The Department of Defense, along with the State Department, had already certified to Congress that Ukraine had implemented sufficient anti-corruption reforms to get the funds. And the Defense Department had already notified Congress of its intent to deliver the assistance. So let's recap all of this. Congress had already funded it. Our own government had already certified that it met all the standards it had met every other year. And Congress had already been notified just like every other year. In a series of meetings of the national security agencies, everyone except the OMB supported the provision of the assistance. And OMB, as we know, is headed by Mick Mulvaney, the president's chief of staff. Ukraine experts at DOD, the State Department, and the White House emphasized that it was in the national security interest of the U.S. to continue to support Ukraine in its fight. But it wasn't just the national security concern, because many people thought that the hold was just outright illegal. And they were right. It was. The president's hold did violate the law because just last week, Congress's independent, nonpartisan watchdog, the Government Accountability Office, released an opinion finding that the hold was illegal. President Trump held the military aid money for so long that the administration ran out of time to spend the money. Ultimately, even after the president lifted the hold on September 11th, again with no clear explanation why, we, the Congress, had to pass another law to extend the deadline, delaying the delivery of the aid. In the same LA Times article that told the story about our friend Mr. Markiev, Ukrainian defense spokesperson said that even though the hold had been lifted, this was in September, quote, it has not reached us yet. That spokesperson went on to say, quote, it is not just money from the bank. It is arms, equipment, and hardware. And to this day, millions of dollars still haven't been spent. Although our government neither informed Ukraine of the hold nor publicly announced it, Ukraine quickly learned about it. On July 25th, the same day as President Trump's call with President Zelensky, officials at Ukraine's embassy here in Washington emailed DOD to ask about the status of the funding. By mid-August, officials at DOD, the State Department, and the NSC received numerous questions from Ukrainian officials about the hold. Everyone was worried. And not just because of the urgent need for the equipment on the front lines, but also because of the message that it sent. You see, President Zelensky had just been sworn in. They were very vulnerable. And as we all know, Vladimir Putin looks for vulnerability. He looks for hesitation. He looks for delay. And any public sign of a hold on that aid could be a sign of weakness that could show him it was time to pounce. President Trump's hold on the Ukraine assistance was eventually publicly reported on August 28th. As we will explain, Ukraine fully understood that the hold was connected to the investigations that President Trump wanted. On February 28th, DOD notified Congress that it intended to deliver $125 million of assistance appropriated in September, including, quote, more than $50 million of assistance to deliver counter-artillery radar and defense lethal assistance. Congress cleared the notification, which enabled DOD to begin spending the funds. For Ukraine to receive the remaining $125 million, Congress required that the Secretary of Defense, in coordination with the Secretary of State, certify that the government of Ukraine had taken substantial anti-corruption reforms. Deputy Assistant Secretary of Defense Laura Cooper and senior officials across our government conducted a review to evaluate whether Ukraine had met the required benchmarks. Ms. Cooper explained that the review involved, quote, polling in all the views of the key experts on Ukraine defense and coming up with a consensus view, which was then run up the chain in the Defense Department to quote, ensure we have approval. By May 23rd, the anti-corruption review was complete and DOD certified to Congress that Ukraine had complied with all of the conditions and that the remaining half of the aid should be released. But again, you don't have to take my word for it. On May 23rd, in a letter to Congress, one of President Trump's senior political appointees, the Undersecretary of Defense for Policy, wrote, quote, on behalf of the Secretary of Defense and in coordination with the Secretary of State, I have certified that the government of Ukraine has taken substantial actions to make defense institutional reforms for the purposes of decreasing corruption, increasing accountability, and sustaining improvements of combat capability enabled by U.S. assistance, end quote. Congress then cleared the funding, which should have allowed Ukraine to receive the aid, but we know that's not what happened. On June 18th, as DOD was preparing to send the aid, they issued a press release, like they normally do, announcing that it would provide $250 million in security assistance to Ukraine for, quote, additional training, equipment, and advisory efforts to build the capacity of Ukraine's armed forces. So this included sniper rifles, rocket-propelled grenades, counter-artillery radar, command and control, electronic warfare, secure communications, vehicles, night vision, and medical equipment.
Live coverage of the Senate impeachment.
However,